Imagine spending millions of dollars encrypting your entire corporate network, locking down every single employee laptop, securing every endpoint, only to have the highly confidential, totally unreleased ending of your upcoming James Bond video game leaked to the whole internet.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a nightmare scenario.
Right. And it didn't even happen because of some sophisticated cyber attack by state-sponsored hackers. It happened because of an unlocked digital door at a mandatory government age rating agency.
It really is a remarkable paradox we're living in right now. I mean, we're building the most sophisticated technological tools in human history, but the foundation they sit on is just, well, it's surprisingly brittle.
Yeah, brittles is the perfect word for it.
And if we want to understand where this digital world is actually heading, we have to look at who controls the hardware, who dictates the software, and crucially, what happens when those systems inevitably fail.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the tech world is operating at an absolute breakneck speed right now, and our mission for this deep dive is to help you make sense of it without feeling totally overwhelmed.
That's exactly.
We're pulling the most critical insights from the April 22nd, 2026 edition of the Tech and Morning newsletter, and we are looking at a highly volatile 48-hour window here.
Oh, absolutely. Massive 48-hour.
We're talking monumental leadership shifts, unprecedented infrastructure blackouts, security breaches, the works. And to really grasp the scale of this, I think we have to start at the very top of the tech food chain, Apple and Google.
The heavyweights.
Right. Both of them are arming themselves for the next decade of artificial intelligence, but they are fighting from entirely different universes. Let's start with the earthquake in Cupertino. Tim Cook is actually stepping down as CEO.
Yeah, after 15 years at the helm, it's wild. It marks a really profound shift for the company. He's transitioning to executive chairman on September 1st of this year.
Wow, end of an
It
era.
really is. I mean, Cook is widely regarded as an operational genius, you know, the man who basically mastered the global supply chain. But the successor they've chosen signals a very, very specific strategic pivot.
Right, because they're handing the keys to John Ternus, who's been the senior VP of hardware engineering since 2021. And with Ternus moving up, Johnny Cerruggi becomes the chief hardware officer, and Tom Marieb takes over hardware engineering.
Exactly.
But wait, hold on. I don't completely buy this strategy. Like, we're in the middle of a vicious global AI software war, right? And Apple is putting a hardware guy in charge.
It does seem counterintuitive at first glance.
To me, it's like bringing a heavily fortified tank to a drone war. Sure, the tank is beautiful, it's seamless, but does it actually help you outsmart the opponent's moves from the sky? Are they just betting the entire farm on on-device AI because they're simply too far behind Google and Microsoft in the cloud?
Well, it's a totally fair critique. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the whole tank in a drone war analogy misses one crucial detail about how AI actually works in practice.
Okay, what's the detail?
The bottleneck for artificial intelligence right now isn't just the algorithms anymore. It's the physical compute power and, crucially, the latency of getting an answer back from a distant server.
Ah, okay, the physical infrastructure.
Right. Look at John Ternus's track record. He spearheaded the incredibly successful transition to Apple Silicon. He fundamentally understands that Apple's undeniable historical advantage is that seamless marriage of custom silicon and software.
Right, they control the whole widget.
Exactly. By focusing on on-device AI, meaning the neural engine running the models actually sits locally on your phone or your laptop rather than in some server farm, they bypass cloud latency completely.
Yeah.
And, you know, they also sidestep a total minefield of privacy concerns.
I hear that. I do, but it still feels like a defensive maneuver to me. I mean, cloud models have trillions of parameters. A phone chip can only hold so much data, right?
And that is exactly the skepticism Apple has to confront right now. WWDC 2026, this coming June, is going to be Ternus's crucible.
This big test.
Oh, for sure. It's his first real test to prove to developers and the investors that prioritizing edge computing, which just means processing data at the edge of the network on the device itself, isn't just a concession to being late to the cloud. He has to prove it's a superior, more secure, long-term strategy.
Which perfectly sets up the contrast with the other side of this arms race. Because while Apple is trying to, shrink the brain down to fit inside your pocket, Google is aggressively doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, they are going all in on the cloud.
Pouring billions into expanding an unprecedented, sprawling cloud infrastructure, they just rolled out the Gemini AI assistant directly into the Chrome browser for users across the Asia-Pacific region.
It's massive.
We're talking about an entirely new default interface for a potential market of over 2.5 billion people.
It's a staggering land grab, honestly. The rollout specifically targets Australia, Indonesia, Japan, the Philippines, Singapore, South Korea, and Vietnam.
That's a huge footprint.
Yeah, Google's strategy is omnipresence. They want Gemini to be this inseparable layer of your web browsing experience long before competitors like OpenAI's ChatGPT or Microsoft's Copilot can really establish a foothold in those daily habits.
The feature that really caught my eye in this rollout, though, is what they're calling personal intelligence.
Oh, yeah, that's the game changer.
Right, because on the desktop version of Chrome, Gemini isn't just searching the web anymore. It is connecting directly to your private Gmail and your Google Photos.
Just synthesizing your whole life.
Exactly. You can ask it to pull information from your own personal history. Though, there are some really fascinating regional caveats to this, aren't there? Like, Japan, for instance, isn't getting the iOS version of this specific integration.
No, they aren't. And that really comes down to strict legal and cultural restrictions in Japan regarding data privacy and corporate ecosystem lock-in.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Google has to tread very, very carefully around how user data flows between applications in that specific jurisdiction. But, you know, to power this kind of hyper-personalized, instantaneous AI across billions of accounts globally, Google needs raw computing power.
And standard chips just aren't cutting it.
Not even close. Off-the-shelf components just can't handle the load anymore.
Which brings us to the monumental hardware pivot they just made. Google is reportedly in deep talks with Marvell Technology to build two entirely new custom AI chips.
Yes, this is huge news.
They're designing a new generation of their Tensor Processing Unit, the TPU, and they're complementing it with a custom memory processing unit, an MPU.
Right.
And the market saw this and just instantly reacted. Marvell's stock shot up almost 6% to a record high of $147.84. But I have to ask, why Marvell? I mean, Google already has essentially limitless resources.
Well, what's fascinating here is the underlying economics of the cloud. Right now, NVIDIA holds a near monopoly on the high-end GPUs that power AI training.
They're the only game in town.
Basically. And those chips are incredibly expensive, they're super power hungry, and every single tech company is fighting tooth and nail for allocation.
Right.
Now, Google already works closely with Broadcom, but by bringing Marvell into the fold, they are actively diversifying their supply chain to escape NVIDIA's shadow. Marvell specializes in ASICs.
Which stands for Application-Specific Integrated Circuits, right? Meaning a chip that is designed to do exactly one thing flawlessly rather than a general-purpose processor that does a little bit of everything.
Exactly, because when you are processing billions of Gemini queries an hour, you do not need a graphics card that was originally designed for video games.
Right, that's just wasted silicon.
Yeah. You need silicon hyper-optimized for neural network inference. And that memory processing unit, the MPU you mentioned, is really the key here. Because the biggest bottleneck in AI right now isn't always the raw processing speed. It's often the time it takes to fetch the data from the memory banks. So by designing custom memory processors to sit right alongside their TPUs, Google is taking absolute vertical control of their own destiny in the cloud.
Here is where it gets incredibly tense, though. We just talked about Google building this multi-billion dollar hyper-optimized cloud architecture. But what happens when that centralized intelligence just, poof, evaporates?
Oh, we saw exactly what happens.
Yeah, because a few years ago, AI was, you know, a fun parlor trick. You'd write a funny poem or something. Today, an outage feels like the digital electricity to your office just got shut off.
That's paralyzing. Yeah. A sprawling digital blackout.
And on April 20th, right around 10.05 a.m. Eastern time, OpenAI suffered a crippling three-hour global outage. This wasn't just the ChatGPT website timing out. This took out the iOS and Android apps, the voice mode, and crucially, the Codex API.
Yeah, and the heat map of this outage was just wild.
Where was it hitting the hardest?
Everywhere. It was totally global. You had over 8,700 reported downtime spikes in the UK alone.
Wow.
Over 1,900 from the US and more than 900 from India. And remember, those are just the people who actively navigated to a status tracker site to report it.
Right. The actual number of impacted users was probably in the tens of millions.
Easily.
I really want to focus on that Codex API failure for a second, because if the ChatGPT website goes down, okay, maybe some marketing guy has to write his own email for once.
Right, Trinity strikes.
But an API going down feels vastly more destructive. Has the corporate world just become dangerously reliant on a single point of failure here?
Without a doubt. I mean, an API, an application programming interface, is essentially the connective tissue that allows two different software programs to talk to each other in the background.
Okay.
So thousands of third-party businesses have built their own products, like coding assistants, customer service bots, data analysis tools, that secretly rely on OpenAI's Codex API under the hood.
So they're basically white labeling OpenAI?
Exactly. So when OpenAI's servers hiccuped, all of those independent businesses instantly went dark. It perfectly illustrates the inherent brittleness of centralized cloud architecture.
So what's the play here? If you're running a business, you can't just send your entire engineering team home for 3 hours every time a server in California crashes.
You really can't. And this incident is a harsh wake-up call about redundancy.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, if AI is your digital electricity, you need a backup generator.
You need a fallback.
You cannot rely on a single vendor. And during those 3 hours, we actually saw savvy users and developers executing immediate pivot strategies.
Where did they go?
A lot of people jumped to Anthropic's Claude, which has gained massive traction lately for its safety and its nuanced reasoning.
Right.
Others shifted over to Google's Gemini or Microsoft Copilot, or they used Perplexity just to maintain their research workflows.
And some developers just threw their hands up and took matters into their own hands, didn't they?
Yeah, a significant number of them pivoted to running Meta's open source Llama 3 model locally on their own machines.
Oh, wow. Which brings us completely full circle back to Apple's strategy.
Exactly, because running an open source model locally completely bypasses the cloud, rendering you totally immune to those kinds of server outages.
Okay, so we've seen how insanely complex trillion-dollar cloud infrastructures can fail. But sometimes the most devastating digital disasters aren't caused by sophisticated server crashes or, you know, brilliant hackers burning zero-day exploits to bypass firewalls.
No, sometimes they are caused by baffling, almost comical human negligence.
Right. Especially when legacy government systems are forced to interact with highly sensitive corporate secrets.
Yeah, this story is just wild.
Let's talk about the IGRS, the Indonesian game rating system. The Ministry of Communication in Indonesia had to abruptly shut this entire portal down after a catastrophic API vulnerability was exposed.
Just pulled the plug on it entirely.
And the person who exposed it wasn't some dark web syndicate. It was literally a Reddit developer going by the handle Mathinity, who was just trying to build an alternative, cleaner front end for the public website.
Right. And in doing so, they basically stumbled onto a digital door that had just been left wide open by the developers of the government site.
And it is so much worse than just an open door. This vulnerability exposed the raw emails and passwords of over 1,000 AAA game developers.
1,000. That's a massive breach.
But the real casualty here is IO Interactive, the studio famous for the Hitman franchise. Over 60 minutes of private gameplay footage, including the actual complete ending of their highly anticipated, totally unreleased game, 007. First Light was leaked to the public.
So brutal.
And this happened just 6 weeks before its scheduled release on May 27th, 2026. Oh, and footage from another major title, Echoes of Ankrad, was also ripped from the servers.
I just have to say, I am completely astonished by the sheer injustice of this.
It's hard to wrap your head around.
You're a developer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You spend tens of millions of dollars locking down your own studio. You require biometric access. You're encrypting internal hard drives, only to be completely compromised through a mandatory government portal just to get a legal age rating. Yeah, and this raises an incredibly important question about the modern supply chain of digital goods.
Mm.
You know, your intellectual property is really only as secure as the weakest link in your mandatory compliance chain.
Right.
Because when a studio completes a video game, they don't just put it on a shelf. They are forced by law to submit extensive, unredacted video footage to rating boards across the globe.
Like the ESRB here, PG in Europe.
Exactly. And the IGRS in Indonesia. They have to do this to secure a commercial age classification.
So they hand over the secret ending to a James Bond game, and the rating board just leaves it sitting in an unsecured database on the public internet. How does an API vulnerability like that even happen in 2026?
Well, it usually comes down to missing authentication checks. An API is supposed to verify who is asking for data before it actually serves it up.
Okay.
In this case, the Reddit developer was just pulling public data to make a nice user interface. But the government's API was so improperly configured that it allowed those unauthenticated queries to reach way deeper into the server's backend.
So it just handed over whatever they accidentally asked for.
Pretty much. You started pulling private developer credentials and the raw media files that were attached to those accounts. They just lacked fundamental modern security standards. I mean, zero encryption for the submitted video files and a total absence of multi-factor authentication.
Okay, so for you listening to this, what is the actual takeaway here? Because honestly, if a government agency can't secure a database, what hope do any of us have?
Well, the security takeaways here are vital. Whether you manage a massive AAA game studio or you're just looking out for your own personal digital life. First, never ever reuse passwords across different systems.
Seriously, stop doing it.
Yes. The fact that over 1,000 developer passwords leaked means malicious actors will now use automated scripts to try those exact email and password combinations on the developer's internal corporate networks.
Oh, wow. So it's a stepping stone.
Exactly. If a developer used the same password for the Indonesian government site as they do for their studio's internal VPN, the entire company is compromised.
That's terrifying. Second, demand and enforce two-factor authentication everywhere. If the IGRS had enforced 2FA, stealing a password wouldn't have been enough to access the portal.
Right, they'd still need the physical phone or token.
Exactly. And finally, for digital assets, employ invisible digital watermarking. When a leak happens, you need to be able to forensically trace exactly which rating board lost the file so you know where the breach originated.
It is just a brutal blow for IO Interactive. Mm. 6 weeks out, and your big cinematic James Bond finale is ruined for millions of fans because of one bad line of code in a compliance portal.
Heartbreaking for that team.
It really is. But to shift our focus away from the chaos for a moment, after talking about ruined video games and global AI blackouts totally paralyzing the workforce, let's look at how we actually get to play and unwind safely.
A little palate cleanser.
Yes. Sony just dropped their PlayStation Plus updates for the month.
And it is an unusually strong lineup for April 2026, which actually tells us a lot about the current state of the industry, for sure. So Sony added 8 new games to the PS Plus Extra and Premium tiers. And the heavy hitters here are substantial. You've got Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered, which is a sprawling 68 gigabyte action RPG.
A massive game.
Yeah. You've got The Crew Motorfest, which is a 45-gigabyte open-world racer set in Hawaii. And for the meticulous strategy fans, Football Manager 26 Console Edition, coming in at 12 gigs.
Nice mix of genres.
Yeah.
And they also made sure to include some quirky independent titles to balance out those blockbusters.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Games like Scroll with a Gun, which delivers exactly the kind of chaotic gameplay the title suggests.
I love that title so much.
It's great. And the narrative horror game, The Casting of Frank Stone. But it is worth noting, however, that Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, was surprisingly pulled from the service after only 3 months.
Which is really fast, right?
Yeah, that's an unusually short window for these catalogs.
But if we look at the economics of this for you, the listener, I mean, if you are paying around $15 a month for that extra tier, you are instantly getting access to sprawling games like Horizon and Motorfest that still retail for $50 to $70 individually.
Value is undeniably there.
So how does the math on this actually work for the developers? Are they just taking a huge loss?
Not necessarily, but it radically alters how we have to view the gaming economy now.
Yeah.
It validates the modern value proposition of game subscriptions, but it also reveals a real shift in consumer psychology.
How so?
Well, in the past, a game's financial success was almost entirely dictated by its first quarter sales.
Mm.
Right? You launch, you sell boxes, you're done. Mm. Now, we are looking at a long-tail revenue model.
Right.
Sony pays these developers a lump sum up front, or sometimes a playtime-based royalty, just to put their games on the service. So for a consumer, if you can resist the immediate hype cycle, like if you don't suffer from a severe case of FOMO, the fear of missing out waiting 6 to 12 months for these AAA games to hit a subscription catalog is the ultimate money-saving strategy.
It really is. Assuming, of course, you can successfully dodge the spoilers online for 6 months, like the ones that just leaked for 007.
Which feels increasingly difficult these days.
Practically impossible. Wow, okay. We have covered an extraordinary scope of ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at Apple pivoting into a totally new hardware-focused AI era with John Ternus at the helm, prioritizing the physical chip over the cloud.
Right.
Then we examined Google doing the exact opposite, making multi-billion dollar moves to dominate cloud infrastructure and building those custom ASIC chips with Marvell to escape NVIDIA's shadow.
The Great Divergence.
Exactly. Then we witnessed the undeniable fragility of that same cloud architecture with the three-hour ChatGPT global outage that paralyzed third-party software everywhere. And finally, we saw how simple human error in an Indonesian rating board's API brought a massive AAA studio to its knees.
It is a really dense web of information, but it all points to a single underlying tension. As our technological tools become vastly more powerful, the invisible infrastructure holding them up needs to be equally resilient.
And right now, it isn't.
It simply isn't. Which brings me to a final thought for you to ponder before we go.
Lay it on us.
Think about combining two very specific concepts we explored today. Early on, we talked about Google rolling out personal intelligence, connecting their Gemini AI directly to the deeply private, intimate details of your Gmail and your Google Photos to act as this personalized assistant.
Right, synthesizing your life.
Then later, we discussed how easily an unencrypted, totally basic API vulnerability at a government agency leaked massive, highly guarded corporate secrets.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. So as we rush to integrate artificial intelligence into the most intimate parts of our digital lives, giving it unfettered access to our personal emails, our financial receipts, our family photos.
Yeah.
What happens when the inevitable IGRS-style human error hits those AI systems?
Wow.
Because if a single, badly configured API can spoil the ending of a James Bond game, what could it do to your personal history?
That is a genuinely chilling thought to end on, and exactly why we do this show. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tech you rely on every day. Stay safe out there, and we will catch you on the next one.